Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go. When I look to the sky, something tells me you're here with me. And you make everything all.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and I'm a little tongue-tied this evening. I don't know why. And our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Science and Human Potential, and that can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Dr. Pamela Ray Heath. And if you have any question, comment, or would like to talk with our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-815-9756, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio. And good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, Francis. And what would you like to talk about this evening? Well, before our guest comes on.
Before our guest comes on, I think we had an afterlife discussion group meeting last night, and we showed a movie called Something Unknown is Doing I Don't Know What, or pretty close to that title.
Yeah. It was an excellent documentary.
A little weirdo title, so it's kind of hard to remember, but it was wonderful because it had all the key scientists in it that are trying desperately to explain things that occur naturally. We just can't explain them, and for some reason we'll get thrown into this big basket of paranormal. So what irks me a bit is why science and scientists are always trying to explain things. Isn't it okay that it is just that it is?
Well, that's not good science, you know.
I know that.
I mean, the purpose of, you know, science is to find out, you know, what things are and what causes them to be. But you're right. I mean, it is a challenge, and it's very frustrating to many of these scientists to explain things in a scientific fashion, such as, you know, telepathy and precognition you know, remote viewing and psychokinesis and so forth. But they have done an excellent job, and they've really amassed a tremendous amount of data that's really incontrovertible. It's with odds against chance of a million to one. You heard the talk yesterday about the remote global consciousness program. The odds against chance of having all these spikes in these generators, you know, was a million to one. So the point is, and I think where you wanted to go with this was belief and why people, you know, believe things. And what struck me in that documentary yesterday was, you know, Dean Radin. Now, Dean Radin is he's a brilliant scientist, and I trust his work very much. And he was talking about going to a spoon bending party, you know, which he attended as a, you know, a good scientist and being an open-minded skeptic. And he describes how he was watching, you know, the person that was trying to bend the spoon like a hawk, you know, with his science hat on. And at the same time, he was holding a spoon and he was trying to mimic the motions just to get a feel for the dynamics of what's going on. And lo and behold, to his amazement, his own spoon started bending.
Well, I think the way he described it was his spoon was actually mimicking the spoon that was being bent by the person he was observing.
Yeah, well, now, but what struck me about that is, you know, when he was talking about it afterwards, scientifically, as a scientist, he couldn't explain it. He had some theories, but he couldn't really explain it. But as a person, on a personal level, that personal experience that he had convinced him that this was real. And that extends to so many aspects of our life, you know, that we don't really, truly, we may say we believe in something, and you know, and we may say we have faith in something, but without having that direct personal experience, I don't know whether we ever truly can. And that also has applications to a belief in the afterlife.
Well, clearly having the experience, you know, sends the message home to yourself. Yes, it's real. It really happened. It happened to me. But even people who haven't had it, who are very close to people who have and trust that person, will believe because they trust that the person had a real experience. The problem I see is that, and it's always like this, you know, the outspoken majority of the naysayers, you know, they're always the first ones to jump and point the finger and say, oh, you're having a psychotic episode, or this is wrong with you, or you should see a doctor, you should take meds, or whatever it is, until they themselves have an experience. Then they first start the search. And I think what's happening with this shift of consciousness that we're witnessing is that more and more people are having experiences. And thank goodness that there's enough literature out there to encourage them to speak about it.
Yeah, and the experiences is what will change that worldview. You know, I always go back to, I mean, I don't know the exact statistics in the latest surveys, but I think it's somewhere, well, if you ask people across the world if they believed in an afterlife, I think the stats show it's somewhere around 75 or 80% answer in the affirmative that yes,
right.
They believe there's an afterlife. And when I think about that, a lot of that 75 and 80%, I don't know. I think that they hope that there's an afterlife, and I say that based upon their religious upbringing and their
right. But that group of people who have been who come to that belief because of their religious upbringing, it's still a real belief. It's not a hope. They believe it, and they believe that if they do the ABCs of what they're told in their specific religion, that they're going there. They also then believe in not going there, or a hell, or some other thing that they're not going to get if they don't do the ABCs of their religion. So religion is kind of like a cage that they get caught up in.
Yeah. I question whether they do have that deep knowing where they truly, truly believe. I still think that there's a lot of questions in people's minds, but yet when they look, how many people, you know, they believe in a God that they've never seen, you know, because they on blind faith, you know, and faith can be very strong, but ultimately whether that's are they truly convinced? I question that.
Well, yeah, they're convinced. I mean, I'm just going to draw a bad analogy, which is just the concept of prejudice. People act upon what they believe, truly, truly believe to be true about a group of people, and that's prejudice. Ask them if they believe it. Absolutely. They'll tell you in no uncertain terms that what they know is for true.
Right. Well, listen, if you, I mean, let's say you you hear people keep telling you that a good friend of yours, I'll use this as a weird example. You hear these rumors that a friend of yours is cheating on their husband, and you know this person, and you say, absolutely cannot be. I know this person, you know, fine, moral person would never do something like that. And despite the various bits of evidence, you know, that come up, you still would refuse to believe it. Then one day, lo and behold, you surprise her by knocking on the door.
And she's sleeping with my husband.
<Wasn't going there. laughs> Okay, well, now that personal experience becomes a reality. Because,
right.
You know, people have to, and I'm not going to use the word, you know, see it with their own eyes, because that's not true. They can sense it and feel it, not with
right. And so they
organ.
Don't find out the truth about whether there's an afterlife until they get there.
Right.
And lo and behold, our guest tonight is going to tell us about what they do say about the afterlife from the afterlife,
based upon evidence. So. With that, I guess we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we are going to introduce our guest, Dr. Pamela Ray Heath. So stay with us.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.wimbridge.org. WINDBRIDGE.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to Signs of Life Radio. The number here is 1-888-815-9756. Tonight's guest is Dr. Pamela Ray Heath. Dr. Heath received her medical degree from the University of Texas Medical Branch, and she practiced medicine for about 30 years before retiring. And then during her busy medical career, she pursued and received her doctorate in psychology from Rosebridge Graduate School and the American School of Professional Psychology. Dr. Heath is a member of the Parapsychological Association, the Society for Scientific Exploration, the Society for Psychical Research. She's co-founder of the Paranormal Research Organization. She's an accomplished writer. She's a psychic. She's an accomplished artist. And she's a web designer. I think that's enough. She is the author of PK Zone, A Cross-Cultural Review of Psychokinesis. She has a book that's coming out in September called Mind-Matter Interaction, Historical Reports, Research, and First-Hand Accounts. She co-authored a book with Dr. John Klimo called Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife, and has recently authored another book with John Klimo entitled The Handbook to the Afterlife. Welcome, Dr. Heath.
Well, thank you for having me back again.
Yeah, it's we always enjoy having you. And, you know, quite frankly, I remain fascinated by your career. I mean, not only because of your accomplishments, but the progression of your interests. I mean, you came from the world of hard science, where I think it's to say that most of your medical colleagues would scoff at notions of one's mind that can act independently of one's brain. Mm-hmm. You know, then you study and become a parapsychologist. Then you acknowledge your abilities as a psychic. You know, what, I guess my question is, what made you start studying parapsychology after being in the world of medicine?
I started having psychic experiences, and I have to say it really freaked me out as a doctor. I didn't expect it. I had always liked science fiction, so I sort of, in a distant kind of way, thought it might be possible for certain people, you know, but I didn't ever think it was going to be me as one of them. And after I got over being totally freaked out about it, I started experimenting with it to see how consistent or reliable it was. Again, the scientist in me wanting to know, is this my own fantasy here, or is there something real going on? And after I convinced myself it really was real, and I did get some training, by the way, along the way from a spiritualist, Mary Smiley, who is an anomalous healer, because one of my first talents was healing. Not surprising, given I was a doctor. And, you know, it got to the point where I was like, I really wanted to understand myself. So it was really more a quest for self-understanding than it was something impersonal that sort of impelled me to find somewhere that I could train in. Unfortunately, Rosebridge no longer exists. It got bought out by a school that's now Argosy University, and they're part of that cadre that doesn't really like to particularly admit parapsychology exists. But
so you really approached it as a true scientist. I mean, things were happening to you, and you really wanted to know why.
Yeah, and I wanted to know, and as a physician, because one of the things I was able to do early on was accelerate healing on myself, certainly, like heal things in hours that should take days. And so the physician in me was very curious, you know, does it skip stages? How does it work? And it seemed like everything just accelerated, that no stages were skipped.
Yeah.
They just went much faster than they ought to. And so I did do a fair bit of self-experimentation, and then did it still happen if I didn't do the energy? It didn't. It took the normal time to heal. But I did a lot of quiet little experiments on myself quite a while before I was willing to accept it.
And did you have any opportunity to integrate your psychic healing abilities in your medical practice?
Well, you know, one of the things I was told early on in a reading was that I tended to heal people, whether I consciously intended to or not. And one of the things I had noticed, I used to be married to another anesthesiologist, and he and I had nearly identical practices. We had the same kind of patient population. We had the same training. We did the same medications, the same amount, the same order. We even had our same spiels. You know, virtually no difference between our techniques. My patients always did better. It drove him nuts. They always did better. And I'm not sure why. I mean, looking back on it, I sort of wonder, you know, was that a factor? I did not and still don't really advertise myself as a healer because I think I'd just be inundated with people.
Right.
But sometimes if I had patients or others ask me, I would do what I could for them. I think where it was more helpful to my patients when I was practicing was that I would use the psychic side of things to sort of watch out for trouble, to sort of scan for if there's going to be issues. I don't know how much you know about anesthesia, but things can go sour very, very fast with very little warning. So
yeah.
I would use my intuition as a way to try and keep a heads up. And if it said trouble was about to hit, I would just start double-checking everything to see if I could catch it, you know, nip it in the bud. And there were times when I did. I was successful.
Well, I certainly would want you administering the anesthesia. I mean, you could come at it from both the scientific and the intuitive end. I'm protected on both sides. It's great. You know.
Well, not only that, but I had the hypnosis training then, too. So I was out here in California. There are patients who are savvy enough to ask for post-hypnotic suggestions.
Ah,
And whether it be lack of pain, rapid healing, other things, if they ask for it, I would do that for them also.
Mm. Let's talk about, you know, your book, The Handbook to the Afterlife. Now, I read it. I enjoyed it very much. It's a comprehensive work, and it pieces together accounts of the afterlife from a multitude of sources. So tell us a little bit about what some of these sources were. I mean, how do you go about, you know, researching the afterlife?
Well, this book really grew out of the earlier one, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife, where I probably read about 500 books. And we only used about a fourth of those for the suicide book. But after that book came out, a lot of people were asking me questions that I realized I had the answers to. And some of those answers were already in the suicide book, but people didn't want to read that book. So I talked to John about doing this as a Cliff Notes version. So I kind of have to laugh when people talk about how comprehensive it is, because this is our attempt at a Cliff Notes version to
right.
the afterlife. And most of the sources are channeled. There are some cases of post-life hypnotherapy regression of past lives. There's some cases of near-death experiences. But I would say 90-95% of the material is channeled from different books. And as before, we try and have a balanced approach and talk about when bias might have crept into the data. So we'll sort of give you the common ground, where almost everybody, regardless of culture or time, seems to agree. Like I say, this is a Cliff Notes version, so we didn't try to reference it out,
right.
but just to say, look, we've read, and John has probably read, you know, 20,000, I don't know how many books. He's read everything, I think, that was just about ever channeled.
Yeah, right.
So we sort of went at it as, okay, having read all this material, we'll synthesize it for you, boil it down into a Cliff Notes version of just the basic stages, because it seems like there's a lot of interest right now in the afterlife with all the paranormal shows on TV. And this is sort of basic stuff that could be very handy to those people to understand where spirits can get stuck and how to help them move on.
Right. And I know, as you mentioned in the book, I mean, the purpose of the book is not to convince people, you know, that there is an afterlife. But I think it's clear from the body of the channel material that, you know, when we think of our lifespan as being, you know, just the period from our birth to our physical death, we may be short-sighted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I guess the other new take, and it just sort of emerged when we were working through the material, was that psychologists always talk about lifespan development, and it depends on which psychologist you talk about, you know, Erickson, Piaget, or whomever, as to what those stages are, when they hit, what gets accomplished. But I think what we realized was the afterlife is an extension of that. It's not like there's no more development. It really continues. If anything, it's even more important in the afterlife. And so we wanted to sort of look at it as just a continuation of this one learning process.
Right, and I, as you point out, and one the reader would get from the book, is that some people believe, probably misguidedly, you know, that when we pass on to this other, you know, dimension, and a lot of people think that you're imbued with this great knowledge and insight.
Yeah.
All-knowing.
Right.
And that's not what the reports show, is it?
No. Dying does not make you smarter. I wish it did. In fact, there is a point when they do tend to get more enlightened, but it's fairly late in the stages. It's not early on. And certainly if you're dealing, unless you're doing a lot of meditation, dealing with higher level spirit guides, that kind of thing, you're going to be more apt to run into sort of, shall we say, those who have just recently gone into the afterlife. They're still confused. They don't know what's going on. They still have their own belief system that they carry over from when they were alive. And I certainly wouldn't expect them to necessarily be any wiser than you are or any better able to make decisions than you are. It takes them a while to get to that point of spiritual development, shall we say.
Yeah, you know, it does make sense to me that, you know, especially if you live your life thinking that, you know, death was, your physical death was the end of everything, and then you find yourself alive, it's got to be a period of confusion. And so I guess it takes quite a while to for some people to believe that they're dead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and this is where it's interesting. Personality can play into it. If you are an argumentative person or stubborn in life, you know, and I think we all know a few of those, they have the same problem in the afterlife. They're not open to new ideas or the fact that maybe they're wrong about what goes on in the afterlife, and it really bogs them down.
Mm. Well, you know, a lot of people, and again, as you mentioned, you take a lot of the commonalities in the reports and you piece them together, and there were a striking number of reports that talk about people sort of congregating in different segments, different groups, you know, people of common thoughts, common beliefs, maybe the same energy patterns. So we tend to hang out together with sort of like-minded people.
Yeah, but we do that when we're alive, too. I think
Okay. One
of the interesting things is there's some common ground between what we do as living and what we do on the other side. And certainly, as living, we do tend to see what we expect to see and create our own realities to some extent, shall we say, co-create it anyway. And also, we tend to hang out with people who are like-minded, that we enjoy because they reflect our values. Same thing happens in the afterlife, for better or for worse.
Mm. And we're talking with Dr. Pamela Ray Heath, and the number here is 1-888-815-9756. You know what I wanted to ask you was the, a lot of people, you know, as the foundation, you know, we're interested in a lot of different phenomena, including mediumship, and some things that, a common question that we get is, you know, how come my loved one on the other side hasn't communicated with me? And I think that maybe, and I'm interested in your opinion. Do you think it's a learned trait? I mean, we assume that just because we're dead, we have the ability to communicate. But I would imagine you have to learn how to do that and maybe seek assistance. And maybe that's why some people get a lot of messages and some people don't.
Well, I think that can certainly be a factor. But I think what happens more often is that they are communicating and we just aren't recognizing it. And that's part of why in the last part of the book we do talk about making contact in dreams, because I think that from what I read, that's one of the easiest ways for them to connect to us. But we don't always remember our dreams. We don't always remember that contact, or we poo-poo it as, oh, I just made that up. That was wishful thinking or whatever. And I think they get discouraged after a while if they're trying to make contact and you're ignoring them.
Mm. When we talk about, we mentioned before, you know, channel the reports, and a lot of people are familiar with mediumship, but maybe not so many, you know, with channeling. Is the only difference between the two the content of the information? Like the channeling tends to be more deep message, spiritual kind of messages from the other side?
Well, I think, you know, this is John's area of expertise, and he and
I have
talked about this. And I think that the real difference is when we talk about mediumship, it's you're obtaining psychic information. But generally speaking, because I do a lot of mediumship, I do very little channeling. With mediumship, you're listening to what the spirit says, and then you relay it yourself. With channeling, you let them come through you and speak firsthand using your vocal cords. That, to me, is the real difference between it. And frankly, I recommend mediumship over channeling because there's not a lot of spirits that are good at using your vocal cords and coming through cleanly, that sometimes you can actually communicate their messages more effectively if you just sort of get it in mind-to-mind communication telepathically and then speak what it is that you were told.
Mm. The automatic writing, would that be considered a form of channeling? I mean, you don't see that?
It can be channeling. It can also be mediumship. Depends on how much of you is still present.
Right. Many of the reports talk about, you know, reincarnation. You think reincarnation is an optional thing? I mean, is it a necessity that we reincarnate, or do we have free will on the other side and say, well, we could just say, well, I don't want to reincarnate, I want to stay here?
What I read says we do have free will, and that it is a matter of choice. However, what you may get, shall we say, encouraged strongly to do it again, because apparently you would think that when you're on the other side, it's easier to progress spiritually and to work through your lessons and stuff, but that's not what they tell us. They tell us it's actually much easier if you do it in physical form, that you can make a lot more progress and make bigger changes in yourself than you can on the other side, and do it faster. So there's that aspect. Also, for some cases, such as suicides, repeat suicides, who have done it in lifetime after lifetime, I think they get very strongly encouraged to work through it. It's sort of seen as a stumbling block that they really need to get past if they're going to be able to make progress.
Work through it in the physical incarnation?
In the physical incarnation. Yeah. But there is an element of choice, and there's definite free will. Everything we see says there really is a lot of free will in terms of planning your next lifetime and timing of the next lifetime, whether you even take a body. You don't have to. You can potentially work through things in the afterlife, it sounds like. But
it always troubled me that, you know, for instance, you know, working through these issues in multiple incarnations, and but you don't have the knowledge or the memory of your past lives, you know. So, you know, how do you improve yourself? I mean, I guess sometimes you could see it as a cruel joke, you know.
Well, from what I've seen, it's actually an advantage not to remember your past lives. There's too many people who hold grudges for what happened to them before, and I think it's actually easier if you have a bit of a clean slate. Of course, your soul, or the greater self, whatever you want to call it, still remembers what happened and is still nudging you. So if you meditate and you open yourself up, you are going to get hints in that and in dreams as to your course of action. I also think we're seeing more and more people who do remember past lives, but they don't always use them as effectively as they can, because I think when you remember a past life, the purpose is either to tell you, you've already been there, done that, don't go down that path again, or this is to explain why you feel this way, now let it go. Or in some cases, these are the choices you've made in the past. Maybe you'd like to make a different choice this time.
Hello.
Yeah, and I think if you look at past lives as that, rather than I was Cleopatra or I was Napoleon, then I think you can make more use of it. Mm. But I see a lot of people who seem to get bogged down the wrong way. If they do remember the past, I think it's actually a blessing that most people don't.
Mm. I know that most mediums, if not all, talk about having assistance from their spirit guides. Do you think that everyone has a spirit guide? Maybe we just don't recognize it? Or?
Yeah, I think we do. I think we all have, in fact, I think we all have probably multiple spirit guides. And that for some of us, at least, those guides can change periodically depending on what kind of assistance or help or insight we need. And we also have loved ones who are with us who aren't necessarily there as guides. They're just sort of moral support. I can't tell you. I would say the majority of people I read whose grandmothers are on the other side, you often see a grandparent there, you know?
Right.
It's really common.
Yeah.
Or other loved ones, you know, and they're just there for moral support, just hanging out.
And also from some of the reports that I read, you know, in your book, sometimes these spirit guides could be people that are working out their own issues from the other side. I mean, maybe that's how they're building good karma by helping, you know, you in the physical.
Absolutely. It's very common to have it as a form of spiritual work. Either the spirit guides who greet you on the other side or those who work as guides.
Mm.
Sometimes they love you. Sometimes they're doing it as a way of learning.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're doing it as a way of working through their own karma. you know, and sometimes they're just, I mean, like we saw cases where people who were on the verge of suicide had loved ones who had also committed suicide come back to talk to them about it and talk them out of it and things like that. So I think that certainly gets you some nice karma points, as well as being something you would expect of someone who loves you.
Right. So the principle of karma is not limited to the physical existence. It's there's karma on both sides. It's one continuum.
I think there is. However, it's sort of interesting. The channel literature does disagree some on that. There are people who say that karma is a matter of choice, and to some extent, and that when you really see what you've done to others, you simply want to make reparation.
Right.
And it's not that there's a law. You simply, you want to. You're that enlightened.
Well, we're gonna take a short break, and when we come back, maybe we can get a little bit into some ways that you might find helpful to our listeners to get into some of these states of consciousness where we can communicate with our loved ones. So we'll take our short break now, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes, so please stay with us.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
Has your marketing pitch been missing the strike zone? Maybe you need a new player to help your marketing efforts. At LNRProductions.com, you'll find a team that can give your broadcast advertising the winning edge. LNR Productions has produced award-winning jingles, radio and television commercials for many businesses just like yours. Radio and television advertising work, but you need the right game plan. Make sure you're getting the most out of your ad every time it airs. www.LNRProductions.com. We'll throw strikes for your business every time.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
In this age of specialization, all CPAs are not the same. Robin Lynn Murray is a New York licensed CPA that is an expert in estate planning, fiduciary tax, and accounting services for trusts and estates. Such planning can often appear to be overwhelming if you don't have the right professional on your team. If you are looking for accuracy, integrity, and personal service in your CPA, you owe yourself to contact Robin Lynn Murray. Her passion is helping her clients through life's avoidable transitions. For more information, go to www.robinlynnmurraycpa.bpweb.com or call 631-648-4996. That's 631-648-4996.
And we've been speaking to Dr. Pamela Heath, and just before we get back to that very interesting interview, we have a few announcements for you. I want to share that our supporters have written to say during these hard times, they do love the radio show, they want to see it continue, they love the work that Forever Family Foundation does, but they just don't have the extra dollars these days to send our way. So even though we're a 100% volunteer organization and a not-for-profit, it still does take a lot of money to do the work that we do, and yet we still want to do more. So I'm going to give you some information on how everyone can help without spending any more money. The first thing you want to do is go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card on our site. Visa will then make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and then each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Now, that's easy as pie. You don't have to spend any more money than you already were going to spend. Now, you don't have to stop there. Now that you have your new Visa card and your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping on Amazon.com. But when you go to Amazon.com, use the link that appears on the Forever Family Foundation website. And again, a portion of your spending, without you spending any more money than you intended to spend, will be donated to Forever Family Foundation. And if you don't see what you want at Amazon.com, you can go to iGive.com. You can designate Forever Family Foundation as your charity of choice, and then search iGive.com for the items you're looking for. For each search, they will donate money to Forever Family Foundation. And when you do find your items in one of their 700-plus online stores, sites, hotels, and this huge list of things, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few minutes when you shop and remember Forever Family Foundation. Also, Bob, did you know that there is an abundance of evidence from well-credentialed scientists suggesting an afterlife?
I hate when you call me Bob.
And when you love to spend a weekend with four well-known research mediums who also happen to be on the Medium Advisory Board of Forever Family Foundation?
Sign me up.
Okay. And when you love to enjoy a delicious banquet dinner followed by an intimate meet and greet with scientists, researchers, and mediums, while internationally renowned medium Suzanne Northrup conducts spirit communication for the group?
I'll be there.
Okay. Then you need to go ahead and make your arrangements for Forever Family Foundation's fourth annual conference and pre-conference banquet dinner this coming November in Fort Myers, Florida. It's a weekend filled with hands-on science and spirit communication. Check it all out at our website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. I'll be happy to chat with you. You might want to hurry so you don't miss the early bird gift pack that will expire on the last day of July, which is a few days from now, or the member-only pre-sale that will save you $50 off the regular admission if you reserve before September 1st. So give me a call and let's talk, 631-425-7707.
I'll call you. And now, patiently waiting, is our guest, Dr. Pamela Heath, and we can continue this fascinating discussion. And you can use that Amazon link on the website to purchase her book, Handbook to the Afterlife.
Purchase all of her books.
All of her books. her website is Pamela Heath, Pamela, PamelaHeath.com. And you can visit and should visit that website for a great deal of information. Dr. Heath, when we talk about life reviews, I mean, you know, many people are familiar with the near-death experience accounts, and a certain percentage of those people report seeing their lives, you know, go by and being able to identify the good and the bad parts of their life and they experience it, which seems to be a lot of times a long time, even though it's only a minute or so. Is this common? Do you think that everybody, even if they don't have an NDE, has a life review?
Oh, yeah, in the afterlife, it seemed to be the most, in the self-judgment or some kind of judgment phase, seemed to be the most universal stage that we saw in every form of channel literature from the Egyptian Book of the Dead on. I mean, it didn't matter what era, time, culture, they all talk about looking back on your life often repeatedly until you fully understand it piece by piece and overseen by guides to help make sure that you do it right. Not only that you don't skip stuff, but also that you're not too hard on yourself.
Yeah. And that life review, I mean, I guess that goes a little bit towards cautioning people to live their physical lives wisely, because it would indicate that you sort of, even though there's no deity that's passing judgment on you, that the self-judgment can be worse, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. What you have to understand is you're not just looking at it in an intellectual kind of way, like reading a book or something. You're reliving it from the viewpoint of anybody who you might have hurt.
Hmm. So
that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, that's
pretty. You feel it firsthand what they went through. Some people suggest it may not be just for people, too. It may be for animals and other beings that are hurt.
Right. So it is in a sense, a form of afterlife justice. I mean, people say, well, how come, you know, this one gets away with all this? Well, he doesn't necessarily get away with it, you know.
Oh, yeah. I don't believe anyone gets away with anything, you know.
Right.
There are a lot of times that I'm like, ooh, I wouldn't want their karma, or that is not going to be fun to relive in the life review.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also, in reading the handbook, some of the reports talk about some spirits that they're actually isolated, you know, from groups, and the reports talk about the reasons for that, maybe to prevent the contamination, so to speak, of other spirits, you know, and also, you know, may help the spirit readjust. So I guess if somebody's got a really heavy karma load and has done a lot of awful things, that maybe in the system of spirit, it's not meant for that person to be mingling.
Well, yeah, and it's not done to punish them.
Right.
It's done to keep them safe and others safe. So it's often described as sort of an energetic shield, almost like cool vibrating glass that's insulating them from everyone else. And it's done until they are more enlightened, or in some cases, if you have really, really strong emotions, apparently that can sort of overwhelm, sort of like the oil spill in the Gulf Coast, just sort of spread everywhere. And they'll try and just contain it until people have become more centered or grounded or balanced in some ways.
Mm.
But it's also to protect them. I mean, this is done, for example, it sounds like with suicide bombers, for example, where they just feel that if they're not having to deal with how different reality is from what they thought it was going to be right away, and they have a little time to adjust to the fact that, gee, they're dead, and this isn't quite what they expected, and maybe have a few other spirits with them who are like-minded to them that they can hang out with, so they can all sort of realize together what's going on to them. That this is better for them, plus it's better for everyone else in the spirit realm because they're not having to deal with that contamination.
I think that, and you reference it in the book, that the near-death experience is a tremendous research tool, and it gives really overwhelming evidence, in my opinion, about you know, another realm of existence, and that we do survive our physical lives. And you read some of the reports, and they're overwhelmingly positive. Some of the descriptions are, you know, hard to put into words. And then you read those, and then you read about people who have out-of-body experiences and deathbed visions, and one leaves themselves saying, boy, I wish I can experience that. But, you know, you can't exactly... it's not like that movie Flatliners where you can induce the near-death experience. So, I mean, what are some of the things that we all can do to increase the probability of catching these glimpses? I mean, you recommend meditation?
Yeah, I'd say meditation would be the number one thing I'd say. Plus, working on your own stuff. Because the more you work on your own issues, whether with a therapist or a counselor or on your own, although I do recommend working with a professional. I think it raises your vibrations, and it makes it easier for them to make contact with you, at least the higher-level spirits to make contact with you. I think there's always guides trying to help you move forward and progress, and if you can empty your thoughts, which is part of what's going on in meditation, it gives them a better chance of getting through.
Mm.
You might also want to do dream journaling. and keep a notebook by your bed and try to remember your dreams and start writing them down and start working towards traveling, perhaps.
Have you ever experienced the Monroe, that hemisync method of different vibrational tones?
I did it. Yeah, I just a brief experiment when I was still in graduate school for parapsychology, but I have to say it didn't work for me.
Right.
Particularly.
Yeah. I know that not a tremendous number, but there's certainly a handful of well-known physicists that are writing books and doing a lot of interviews, and they're talking, they sound very spiritual, you know, which is weird for a physicist, but, you know, it seems like, at least to these scientists, that that dividing line between spirituality and science is getting thinner and thinner. I mean, do you think that we'll ever get to a point where science can prove, you know, these other dimensions or possibly an afterlife?
It's hard to say, but certainly physicists are leading the way in terms of a different way of looking at reality. And in particular, I know Dean Radin and others are doing some really interesting experiments on time. And it's looking like we've always thought of time as unidirectional, moving from past to present to future.
Right.
Looking like that's not true. And if you actually look at the formulas for time, they're bidirectional.
Mm.
And it's looking like intent can not only change things forward in time, but also backward in time.
Mm.
And that's an interesting area.
Yeah, you know, and I like what you said before about, you know, working on yourself and some, you know, raising your own vibrations. I mean, most of the reports, the channel reports, talk about vibrational levels, and you know that we're in this dense field on Earth, and where they are, it's much higher frequency,
mm-hmm.
So it does make sense that if you're able somehow to work on your own, raising your own vibrational energy, that you make communication easier.
Yeah, I think it's a double advantage, too, because the more you work on your stuff during your lifetime, the less you have to do during your life review. And it's faster if you do it here.
Plan ahead.
It's a win-win.
Yeah.
It's really a win-win.
You make reference to the unobstructed universe in your book, you know, Stuart Edward White, and,
mm-hmm.
and I like the way that analogy, you know, with the physical world is the obstructed world, and the afterlife is unobstructed. You know, unobstructed meaning there's no restriction to the different experiences you can have, and the separation that we see here is lifted.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think, you know, some of these earlier works and channel reports are foretell the work of physicists today.
Oh yeah, I have a lot of respect for a lot of the theosophists and other literature. Some of it is every bit as accurate, if not more so, than modern material. But I would say one thing. I'm not sure it's entirely unobstructed on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
I see some of the same problems there that I saw that I see in the physical plane, in the sense that you can have your own beliefs that still get in the way and trip you up, and you are still going to tend to go towards like-minded individuals. But I think there are fewer boundaries in the sense that there's not a me, not me boundary, and there's no boundaries of time.
Hmm.
And those particular boundaries are part of what make it an advantage to be in the physical plane, because it makes it easier to make choices which have meaning.
Yeah. So do you think that there are different spheres, sort of realms or dimensions or whatever you want to call it in the afterlife, you know, where one progresses, you know, from level to level? Or, you know, some people describe, for instance, the next sphere from here is a certain span, and then, you know, you die there in our terms, and you get reborn into another.
Well, I suspect it's not discrete planes of existence.
Yeah.
I mean, although everyone talks about it that way, I think what it probably is just an entire gradation from really low vibrations to high vibrations, and it's continuous. And as you raise your vibrations, you may become less aware of those who are too dense to make contact with. And by the way, there are some spirits who say they'd like to come back and communicate, but they can't because there's too big of a gap. They can't lower their vibrations enough to make it to communicate. And yet, as you move up that scale, you're going to become more aware of those above you and below you. To a certain extent, we can do it in the physical plane, too. When you meditate, you raise your vibrations. It makes it much easier to make contact with higher-level spirits as opposed to some of the tricksters or the lost souls who may be stuck near the earth plane.
Mm. Well, we have been talking with Pamela Ray Heath, Dr. Pamela Heath, and she is the author of many books. The one we've been talking about is Handbook to the Afterlife. Look for her new book coming out in September, Mind-Matter Interaction. The website is PamelaHeath.com, and you'll want to follow her work. It's a wonderful perspective, as we were talking about, as a psychologist and a medical doctor and now open psychic, right?
Oh, I don't know. I'm still, you know, a little one foot in the closet.
Yeah.
I will be talking at the Rhine Institute in October. I'm kind of excited about that.
Okay, so people can go on Rhine.org and learn about that.
Mm-hmm.
And we look forward to talking with you again, and thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. Take care. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and before we say goodnight to our listeners, I want to read that prayer once more for the Gulf by Masaru Emoto. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this to the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, plankton, corals, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico. I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. And with that, it's time to say our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it. Good night, everyone.